So with that in mind, please help me welcome this man back to the WWE.
My name is
Brock Lesnar.
My name is
Brock Lesnar.
My name is
Brock Lesnar.
Paul, say something stupid.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
It's the first sound off of the new year. This is episode 308 of The Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, January 5th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. What you heard there was my little contribution, Slim Shady Lesnar, I like to call it, a little something I put together. I know there's a lot of Brock Lesnar compilations floating around YouTube. There's a Taylor Swift one, among others. We have a lot to get to this week. I will be talking about Hulk Hogan and WrestleMania a little bit later on. Actually, probably not until the mailbag segment, but I got some thoughts on that, some intriguing scenarios that I wanted to run by you guys. And then there's TNA. Just when you think things can't possibly get any worse for them, somehow they find a way. Got a lot to say about that whole situation with Universal Studios and TNA having to go back out on the road. We'll get to all that. But first, with a new year comes the news that the Sound Off has been named a finalist in the category of Best Sports Commentary for the 2013 Stitcher Awards. Very cool stuff. Our first year on Stitcher, really it's less than a year, and you guys worked your magic with your votes, you got us nominated, and now it's down to us and Dan Patrick, and the NFL and CBS Sports and a couple of others. Some stiff competition. So I wanted to say thank you for that. That's a really cool thing, and since we're in it, why not win the damn thing, right? So if you want to help the Sound Off win an award, you can go to stitcher.promotw.com. That's the domain. You don't have to put www in or anything like that. Just stitcher.promotw.com. That's the place to vote. They may ask you to like their page first on Facebook, or they may not, but if they do, it's no big deal. Then you just click on the Vote Now button and scroll down under Best Sports Commentary. You'll see the Sound Off logo. Just click it. You'll see a check mark pop up, and then just scroll down to the bottom and make sure you click the Submit Votes button, or else it will not register. And that's it. You can vote once a day, every day, now through next Monday, January 13th. So spread the word on Twitter and Facebook. And hell, if all it does is expose this show to some new people, and I already know for a fact there are a few people who have listened to our show for the first time because they were aware of us being nominated. And you know, people are browsing the categories and they probably say, oh, what's this show about? And they listen to us for the first time. If that's all that comes out of this, then that's really cool too. But we can't win without you guys. We need your help. And just to be nominated and be in that kind of company with those other shows is actually a very, very cool thing. So vote now, and we'll see what happens at the end of the month when they announce the winners on the 30th, I believe. Some quick PayPal shout-outs for people who have donated to the Sound Off this past week. I am forever indebted to you. Manuel Arce. I hope Arce is the correct way to pronounce that name. It could be Arce, perhaps, but Manuel, you have my thanks. Mitchell Montgomery, Shane Campany, Brian Mahoney, and Brian Martin. You guys rock. Thank you very much for the donations. And if you want to contribute to the Sound Off, there's a little PayPal donate box every day on thesolidmonster.com, right-hand side. Give what you can, and you will get a shout-out here on the podcast. Raw this past Monday night was live from Richmond, Virginia, and with a day off during the week, I figured I would get my Raw thoughts up early. You can go to YouTube right now, our official YouTube channel, which now has in excess of 6,000 subscribers. Hopefully you are one of them. If not, get on there and subscribe, because on Wednesday, my Raw thoughts went up over half an hour, talking about Daniel Bryan joining the Wyatt family, Brock Lesnar's big comeback and potential opponents for him, not just at WrestleMania, but between now and WrestleMania. We talk about that, and I've got some thoughts on Bad News Barrett, a bit of a rant on Bad News Barrett. And an interesting confession from Edge's interview on Chris Jericho's podcast. Jericho had Edge on for a two-part interview. I listened to both parts, and this came in part two, and it's a story that they tell relating to John Cena and what happened with the Nexus storyline and Barrett back at SummerSlam a few years ago, if you remember that whole thing. So I think that's something you'll want to hear. So subscribe to our channel. My username, again, is TheSolomonster, all one word. It should be the second thing, I think, that pops up if you type that into the search box on YouTube. And you can also see all of the other Sound Off extras that I've done. There's more than just this one. I did a Sound Off extra review of NXT 200 a few weeks ago and some other, there's a Triple H DVD, Bob Holly's book. We'll have the Raw review back here next week. I had a day off and just figured, what the hell, why not get my thoughts up early? So that's what I did. And, you know, one of the things I talk about in terms of the Daniel Bryan turn, I guess, everyone's calling it a heel turn. And I guess on SmackDown Friday night, there was a vignette that aired, which I saw. It was actually very well done, very well produced, with Bray Wyatt, where he basically says, Bryan has come home. You know, he's one of us now. And then over the weekend at the live event, I think Saturday night it was, there were photos that popped up online of Daniel Bryan wearing his new Wyatt gear. I think they announced him as Daniel Wyatt, and he's wearing... At first, I looked at what he was wearing, and it's basically very similar to the outfit that Eric Rowan is wearing, only it's a different color. It's like a navy blue. When I first looked at it, it reminded me of Michael Myers from the Halloween movies. If you think of the very first Halloween movie, when he jacked that one mechanic's outfit, it looked the exact same way, only it had long sleeves, and Bryan has the sleeves cut off. That's about the only difference. That and the fact that Michael Myers was probably almost a foot taller than Daniel Bryan. But that was my first thought when I looked at it. A lot of other people have said, oh, it's, you know, a ripoff of Duke the Dumpster Drozzi's old costume, and maybe it is. And that could very well be the next gimmick that they give him. Maybe Bryan will be a garbage man, and they'll just give him this revolving wheel of gimmicks. But so it looks like they're going to keep this going for a while, and perhaps they will portray him as a heel. I just didn't see this as a heel turn, at least not yet. I wish everybody would just calm down, because as I said in the Raw review, I'm almost positive that where this is going to is probably the Royal Rumble. I mean, I guess they could drag it out longer, but to me, it's all a ruse. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Bryan has to be convinced to come back to the good side, but I look at this as being part of a plan that he has in his mind, where in the end, he will use the Wyatts to his advantage. Maybe he'll dump them out in the Royal Rumble, get Bray Wyatt all to himself. I just don't see this as being this heel turn that's going to kill Daniel Bryan's character dead. I think people are overreacting to this. Also in the video, I have a little preview of Old School Raw coming up this Monday night. And on the subject of Old School Raw, I want to send best wishes out to Mae Young. 90 years young she is. She had a brief hospital stay recently and has been moved into hospice care, which is rarely a good sign. She was invited to be part of the Old School Raw show coming up this week. Obviously, she will not be there now. But, you know, Mae Young is tougher than most. She's tougher than most men. So whatever the issue is, whatever the medical problem is, hopefully she fights it so she can wrestle Stephanie on her 100th birthday. I also, believe it or not, caught Main Event this week. I heard good things about Brodus Clay's appearance on Miz TV. The idea that I would go out of my way to watch Main Event for a Miz TV segment is laughable, but I'm glad I did, because not so much for Miz, but, you know, Brodus comes out, he's wearing a suit, he's got new music, and not for nothing, I thought he actually did probably the best promo I've ever heard him cut inside a ring in WWE. It wasn't very long, it was only a few minutes, but I thought he carried himself very well. This is the Brodus Clay character I was hoping that we would see on Raw and SmackDown, and not this, you know, basically this fat jobber who goes out there and gets beaten every week and just complains and bitches and moans about it. I thought that they were actually going to turn him heel, turn him into a monster. He would go out there and be the Brodus Clay that we all thought he was going to be before he debuted the Funkasaurus gimmick. Remember that whole thing? They kept delaying his debut. John Laurinaitis did week after week after week. Finally, when he came out, he was the Funkasaurus. People, I mean, their jaws just hit the ground. I at least was willing to give the character a chance. I thought this could be a marketable character for them. He would sell merchandise. Maybe it would be fun if they played it where he came out looking like a dancing goofball, but when you punched him in the face, or you slapped him and made him mad, he would like turn into the Incredible Hulk and just rip his opponent to shreds. And unfortunately, they never did go in that direction. Now they have a chance to, and it looks like they're dropping the ball yet again. But I liked what I saw in main event, at least. Tenzai came out to attack him. This was kind of the big show closing angle, because on main event, Tenzai and Brodus, that's how you end the show. But I want to see this Brodus Clay character on Raw. You know, if we're going to see him on Raw anyway, I would much rather see this version of him and just let him go out there and beat people up. Because here's the reality of the situation. Brodus is not very good in the ring. In fact, he sucks. He does. He is no good in the ring as a wrestler. But he's got a certain look. He's got a certain presence. Like, just looking at him out there in the suit instead of whatever the hell he normally wears. I don't know. There was something about it that I thought was kind of cool. And that's the character he needs to portray on TV. Not have long wrestling matches. Have him go in there, throw some guys around. And just do that, at least until you figure out a direction for him. So, I don't know if it was a one-week thing, and he'll be back on Raw this week with, you know, his old music, looking like he always does, getting rolled up by somebody else, by, you know, Zack Ryder or somebody like that. But I just wanted to comment on that. I actually liked what I saw from him during this Miz TV segment. And also, I have to say, there was some good back and forth with him and the Miz. There was one line in particular, and I don't remember what it was. I'm kind of pissed. I forgot. But there was one really good line, I think, that Miz actually lobbed at Brodus. So we'll see if this is all forgotten about come Monday night. I got a lot of messages from people asking me if I was going to do another year-in-review show like I did last year. I've done one the last few years. I incorporated predictions into that show last year. And I wasn't planning on that, but I thought what I would do here, in the interest of full disclosure and being open about everything, when you're wrong, you're wrong, when you're right, you're right. I want to run through the predictions that I made on last year's show and see exactly how accurate or inaccurate they were. I thought that would be kind of interesting just to look back really quickly here. So just running through these really quick, these were predictions that I made here on the Sound Off a year ago for 2013. I predicted that Raw would return to 2 hours sometime in the second half of the year. That probably is the one prediction I am most sad did not come true. I still think Raw at 3 hours is just way, way too long. It just kills the show dead for me on most weeks. And I wish they would go back to two, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Not only did they not go back to 2 hours, I think they've grown to like the idea of having 3 hours, and they keep adding more and more content every single week. So Raw, unfortunately, still 3 hours. I predicted that we would finally get a new WWE Championship belt design after 8 years of that spinner garbage. Likely for the 50th anniversary. They didn't really time it for the 50th anniversary, which was in April. They had The Rock unveil the new title design in February. But they did, in fact, unveil a new WWE Championship belt, so I got that right. I predicted Dolph Ziggler would cash in Money in the Bank and become champion, and then go babyface at some point during the year. All of which happened, although I said he would cash in at WrestleMania. He cashed in the night after. But I still count that. I predicted that Ryback would get his WrestleMania moment against Big Show, and he would get him up for the Shell Shock. And that was what I was most worried about. Can he get him up for the Shell Shock? Well, we found out a couple of months ago that he could, because we finally got that Ryback-Big Show match as a random match on Raw, and he did in fact get Big Show up for the Shell Shock, which was just a move that Big Show kicked out of like it was nothing. It was a complete throwaway match. Ryback, of course, did not wrestle Big Show at WrestleMania. He got Mark Henry, and Mark Henry proceeded to fall on top of him and pin him. I predicted that Ric Flair would become the new Raw GM. That did not happen. Roman Reigns would split from The Shield and become the group's first big breakout star, which did not happen, although I do think we're on the verge of that happening, but it didn't happen in 2013. I predicted that the Divas division would be disbanded. That was one of the bigger predictions I made, because they were treating that division so horribly that I didn't see a future for it. I thought this is going to be the year where they just do away with the Divas division and do away with the title, and they use the women in other roles on the show, valets, whatever. And to their credit, they didn't disband the division, but this year really was all about Total Divas. It wasn't even about women's wrestling as much as it was about the reality show, and it still is. Every week we get Team Total Divas against Team Non-Total Divas, and it's all about the Bellas and, you know, the Funkadactyls and all that stuff. But the Divas division is still there, and they still have the title. AJ is the champion, which is the one good thing about it. So I was wrong about that. I did predict Jeff Hardy would re-sign with TNA, which he did. I predicted that Bully Ray would be revealed as a member of Aces and Eights and win his first TNA title, which he did. And I predicted that 2013 would be Hulk Hogan's final year in TNA, and that he would wrestle his final match at WrestleMania 30. I think most of that is probably accurate. And you know what? And we'll talk about the Hogan stuff later, and there are some ideas to put him in a match of some kind at WrestleMania. I don't see him being physically able to do it or getting clearance to. He can barely move. So he's in even worse shape now than he was a year ago when I made that prediction. But that, I think, was a mostly fair prediction for me to make. And I also predicted that there would be more NXT call-ups. The three names to watch out for, I said, this was a year ago, were Cassius Ohno, Corey Graves, and Bray Wyatt. With Bray Wyatt being the one who I thought would probably make it up first. I was right on Bray Wyatt. I was wrong on the other two. Corey Graves is still floundering down in NXT. I thought with Corey Graves, he's got this hybrid Jeff Hardy, CM Punk look that I thought, especially if they didn't re-sign Hardy, which WWE did not, they could at least take this guy, bring him up, and I could see them marketing him that way and him having a certain appeal to maybe the female demographic. And I still think there's something there, but even on NXT, Graves has been off the shows. I don't know if he's hurt or what the deal is. He's been, he's just been kind of off the grid now for the last several weeks. Bray Wyatt, as I mentioned, got called up. Cassius Ohno got fired. So I could not have been more wrong on that one. And I'll make two predictions here. I'm not going to go into what I think will happen in storylines and everything. I think it's pointless. I don't even know that WWE knows from one week to the next what they're going to do in terms of their storylines. Who's going to be champion and this and that. But I will make two predictions here on two of the bigger stories in WWE in 2014 to follow. One is the new network, which we are going to likely find out more about in just a few days. They have a press conference scheduled for Wednesday in Vegas. I predict that before the year is over, the WWE network will break even. They have said on conference calls and such that they need about 1 million subscribers to break even. It's probably going to be internet only. But all these details that are leaking that if they're accurate and if they're true, and let's say the price tag is $9.99 a month, for all this content that they're going to give you in terms of the on-demand stuff and the pay-per-views every month, it almost sounds like a steal. It sounds like they may be underpricing themselves. And I hear details about how this network is going to work, and I get kind of excited about it as a fan. It actually sounds like a really cool concept. We'll see how it is in execution. But I think before the end of the year, I think they'll break even. I think they'll be able to get to a point where, okay, we're now making enough money and we have enough subscribers to break even, and now from here we can grow. Bit by bit, we'll grow a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. So I don't predict the network to be a failure. I actually think it'll be a success. I'm not saying it's going to be a major success, but I think before this year is up, they'll break even. And as far as the TV rights negotiations are concerned, I think that in the end, they're going to stay with NBC Universal and keep Raw on the USA Network and SmackDown maybe on Sci-Fi. They could always move SmackDown to a different station in the NBC family. But I think in the end, they'll just re-sign. They'll probably double their rights fees. I think tripling what they make right now ain't going to happen, not with NBC. Maybe I'm wrong and they go somewhere else. Somebody, they call their bluff and they sign with a station that isn't as big as USA, but they're making 3 or 4 times what they're making now. Hey, if they could pull that off, good for them. But I just think it's more realistic that they end up staying where they are. They'll make more money than what they're making now, probably about double, and everybody will be happy. Because I think in the end, they like having each other as partners. I think that partnership has been a good one. It's very beneficial for them to keep Raw in USA. And it's beneficial for WWE to stay there because USA is one of the most popular cable stations. Everybody knows that at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock, I guess now, on Mondays, you put on USA for Raw. And it's got a penetration of like 98 million or 100 million people. I think it's in their best interest to just continue the relationship. And I don't think WWE wants to leave USA. So those are my two predictions. The network breaks even before the end of the year. And they stay on USA, they stick with NBC Universal, they probably double their rights fees. Tripling or quadrupling, I just don't see it happening. Which brings us to NXT. 2013 was a very, very good year for WWE Developmental. They opened their new performance center. Everything is being built around this performance center. It's going to be their main hub now for for years to come, for the next generation. They pumped millions of dollars into this thing. It's Triple H's baby. I think it's a good thing. Everybody who visits there raves about it. Lots of professional athletes and football players have stopped by to do some training there. So 2013 will go down as a milestone year, I think, in a lot of ways for WWE developmental. And I mentioned the three names before that I thought would be brought up in 2013. Bray Wyatt was. The other two were not. So what I'm going to do here is break this down. I'm going to give you three NXT names to watch for main roster call-ups in the year 2014. And then another batch of three who may also be called up, but just their character progression, to watch their character progression in 2014, because I think there's a lot of potential there. You can call them the B-level tier if you want to. But the three names to watch out for who I do think are going to make it to TV this year in no particular order. And the first two really should be no... Really, the first one should be no surprise. That being Paige. Paige is easily the brightest star they've got on the horizon in that Divas division, and probably the youngest as well. I think she just turned 21 a few months ago. She's awesome. Paige is great. She's a really good wrestler, which is no surprise because it runs in her family. Both of her parents were wrestlers. She's got a very unique look in terms of, you know, I guess her being pale. I hate to even use that as a characteristic, but we're so used to seeing these, you know, blonde-headed, tanned, big-chested bimbos on TV. And then they're not all bimbos, I shouldn't say that. But there's a certain look that they expect out of a diva. And after a while, it's like, eh, okay, they all look the same. Yeah, they look great, but it's nice to see somebody look different. And Paige, when you look at her, more than any other diva they have on NXT or on the main roster, looks different. She's got the British accent. Like I said, great wrestler. And even on promos, she's definitely improved and stepped up her game in terms of promo. She doesn't come off as nervous or anything. If anything, she comes off maybe a little bratty. But I think when she does make her way up, I do think that bringing her up as a heel or as somebody who is bratty, I guess the fans will dictate, you know, what they think of her. That probably is the way to go. And then over time, I'm sure the fans will turn her baby face and she'll be a big star. So at some point this year, and I don't want to hear that she's too young, that they're going to wait another year or two because she's too young. That is an invalid argument, as far as I'm concerned. Especially when you got JoJo on TV, or at least she was on TV. JoJo's 19 years old, and I think now she's back down training at the Performance Center, so I don't believe JoJo is gone. We have not seen the last of her. But I don't want to hear it, that she's too young. She's ready. She is more than ready to be brought up, and that Divas division needs an infusion of new talent. And she could be the one that leads the way. I see money in a Paige AJ feud at some point. That could be a WrestleMania-worthy Divas Championship match. The Divas Champion against the Anti-Diva. Just their two personalities. That's one of those potential feuds I look at. I don't want to compare it to Trish and Lita. I think Trish Lita automatically, because that's one that was very successful. Both women had a lot of fans, so people tend to remember that. I think there's a lot of potential like that in a Paige-AJ feud. And then over time, you could bring up some of the other divas as well. Summer Rae is only going to get better. I like what I see from her. She's already on TV. But she needs to start wrestling more often. Bayley, at some point, I also think will be brought up, although I'm not predicting her for this year. So Paige would be number one. Number two, Sami Zayn. This one's a little more iffy, just because his size. I could see at some point them looking at him and just being like, all right, well, we don't have anything for him. So, like a Corey Graves or an Adrian Neville, he's a really good wrestler, he's a hell of a hand, but we don't have anything for him, so let's keep him down in developmental, even though he probably could have just bypassed developmental from day one. It's not like he needs to be down there. Didn't take him very long without the mask and his new character to find himself. Sami Zayn is really, really good. I know this is not news to people who are familiar with him, but he is. And I don't see his size as being a problem in terms of him getting over with the crowd on the main roster. And as well as they worked together, and as awesome as that match was a few months ago between them, him and Antonio Cesaro, I mean, as great of a 2 out of 3 falls match as they had in front of a crowd of 500 people, I could easily see a match like that between them and a feud getting over in front of 5,000. That's how good these guys are. So I think at some point in 2014, he'll get his moment, and Sami Zayn will make his way up to the main roster. And the third person getting a call up this year, Alexander Rusev. I've mentioned his name here before. Clearly, they have high hopes for the guy. He's already out there doing dark matches with the main roster crew. The way that he went over so strongly on Kofi Kingston a main roster talent, making a special appearance on NXT this past week. Not only did Rusev beat him, he beat him decisively. He made him tap out to his finishing maneuver in just a few minutes. He certainly has the size they like. I don't know if they would bring him up with Lana, his significant other, I guess you would call her. I would imagine they would bring them up as a package. But Rusev has everything that they probably look for in a guy that they want to promote on the main roster. And I could definitely see him being called up first before Paige, before Zayn. He could be the next NXT person who makes their main roster debut. So Paige, Zayn, and Rusev are the main three to watch out for this year. Now, the B-level tier, if you want to call them that, again, guys to just watch out for who could be called up, but more than anything else, I think it'll just be important to watch their progression for the future. Tyler Breeze, and I admit I'm a little bit biased, I just happen to love the Tyler Breeze gimmick. I think he's great in it. He hasn't really done much. He hasn't exactly wrestled a whole bunch of long matches or anything like that, although Mike Dalton is a good wrestler. We already knew that. Trained by Lance Storm, as was Emma. That's why they're good wrestlers. But I'm more interested to see where they go with the Breeze character, because in some ways it's very one-dimensional. How do they, or how does he, develop further layers to the character? Or does he just keep doing the same thing? You know, playing the chicken shit heel gimmick who comes to the ring taking selfies of himself and he's narcissistic and just completely self-absorbed. Or do they cave into the pressure of the fans at Full Sail who all they want to do is cheer for this guy? All they want to do whenever Tyler Breeze comes out is cheer for him. They love Tyler Breeze. And I worry about that because this is not a gimmick that works as a babyface. You could turn him on NXT if you want to, but when he makes his way up eventually to the main roster with this character, there's only one thing for him to be, and that's a guy that people can hate and want to see get his ass kicked. If they cave into what the fans want, the fans cheering for him every week, they may be, oh, the fans are really into this guy, we should turn him. I think that would be the worst thing for Tyler Breeze. And so if he's not going to make his way up to the main roster, you got 12 months now, and I worry that they may be tempted to kind of tweak the character or turn him or do something drastic, and all of a sudden Tyler Breeze, he ain't going to be so fun anymore. So I'm very curious to see what they do with him, and if they start, you know, if they turn him into a tougher competitor, or if he just pretty much coasts for the next year and stays as is. And if he does, are the fans 6 months from now, 12 months from now, going to be as into him? Are they still going to be cheering for Tyler Breeze, or are they going to get tired of the guy? Mojo Rawley is the second person. Mojo Rawley is very, very, very green. He's very new to wrestling, former football player. They liked his look. They liked his size. They like his explosiveness. He's got a nice vertical leap for a big guy. And when he comes out, he's a ball of energy. That's his gimmick, right? I don't get hyped, I stay hype. And he comes out like a bat out of hell, kind of like the Ultimate Warrior back in the day. And he runs around the ring, and that's who he is. That's Mojo Rawley. And from things I've read, they are very, very high on him. They might even rush him to the main roster. So maybe he'll be the first person to make his way to the main roster in 2014. I think that would be completely stupid. A guy who's been in wrestling all of, what, 4 months? And from the matches of his that I've seen, he's not that good. Like, he's acceptable, he's decent, but he gets blown up very quickly, which is not surprising because he comes out there and he's jumping around and he's a big guy and you're going to get tired. So I haven't exactly seen anything impressive out of the guy, but I know they have very high expectations for him. So do they rush him too quickly? Do they let him progress? Does he really get better? Does he get worse? Very curious to see what happens with Mojo in 2014. And the third and final name I'll mention here is Slate Randall. This may be the dark horse here, and a lot of people probably have no idea who this guy is. Slate Randall, real name Sean Ricker, formerly of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, the last man Paul Bearer managed as Percy Pringle before he died last year. You can look up some of the guy's work on YouTube, especially his promo work. I've always been impressed by him. From when I first heard about him and him being signed, I watched some of his matches, some of the promo work he's done. He carries himself very well in general. He also carried himself very well on Rock's reality show on TNT, The Hero. He's a guy who hasn't even technically made his NXT television debut yet. The only appearance I remember Slate Randall making, and I don't even think they mentioned him by name, was 3 weeks ago when they had that lumberjack match with Bo Dallas against Adrian Neville, and he was one of the lumberjacks outside the ring. Half the lumberjacks that were out there, I couldn't even name in a lineup. I recognized him, though, but I don't think he's made a proper debut yet, which is why I put him in this category, because for him to not even be on NXT, and the idea that he'll be on the main roster within 6 months, I think is a bit of a stretch, but he's a guy to watch out for, because when I look at him and I listen to him, this guy can be a star. There's something about him, I think. He could be big. Now, there may be people who ask, why would I put Mojo Rawley ahead of, say, Adrian Neville? Neville may well get a call-up this year. I mean, God knows he's ready for one. But I think they're going to want to bring up a bunch of bigger guys this year. That's just my sense of it. And to be honest with you, Neville may have a better shot at getting called up sooner as part of a tag team. So once Oliver Gray, who he teamed with and he won the NXT tag team titles with earlier last year, if Gray ever comes back from that ACL tear that he suffered, that may give Neville a better chance of getting to the main roster, given how gung-ho Triple H is lately on tag teams. And speaking of tag teams, another nice segue here, we have an update on the status of Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards, the American Wolves, who had two tryout matches for NXT. The first one aired only a few weeks ago. They came out as the American Pit Bulls against the Ascension. That was the match where Davey got dropped on his head and almost broke his neck. It appears that Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards are not going to be offered a contract after all by Triple H. This came according to the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter. Triple H did not want to sign them, largely because of their size. That's the general feeling, and they've already got a lot of guys who are of their size, and again, they're looking for bigger guys. They're looking for guys who stand out more and not guys who are 5'7" and 5'8". You know, that's what they're looking for now. They feel they have enough Adrian Nevilles and Sami Zayns and Tyson Kidds and Evan Bourne, wherever the hell Evan Bourne is. They have enough of those guys. These guys, I guess, didn't stand out all that much. And the other thing also, and this kind of bothers me, and I don't know how accurate this is, but there is a belief that the spot in the match where Davey fell on his head, he was in there with Rick Victor. Again, Victor picked him up for what appeared to be like a back suplex, and there was a miscommunication. Davey fell and landed right on top of his head and neck. There's a belief that that may also have sealed their fate. And Triple H was in the back. He called for them to go home to end the match. The match ended up going on for a few more minutes. That may not have sat very well with Triple H. So it's possible that one spot in that match, you know, you only have one chance to make a good first impression. And it's possible, it sounds like, that that spot may have played a role ultimately in the decision to pass on both of them. And if that's the case, that sucks. That really sucks. But I said it, you know, I said it last week when I went into all this, and I think I talked about it, maybe it was in one of the YouTube videos I did. You know, Triple H has to think long and hard here. He's got a lot of guys down in developmental. He's taken a chance now on Awesome Kong, Karma. Didn't work out well. And you could say that Karma would have been a big success. I think she could have been, but it didn't. You know, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Didn't work out with her. That's on him. Sin Cara. Triple H didn't sign Sin Cara, but they gave him credit for it. How'd that work out for them? They got somebody else under a mask now. They're trying to rehab the gimmick. I don't know if it's going to work or not. The guy is not nearly as over as he used to be, but didn't work out too well with Sin Cara. So do you bring in more indie talent, especially somebody like a Davey Richards who, you know, there have been issues with Davey in the past wherever he's gone. People have had problems. There's been stories, and he's not necessarily the kind of person who's going to keep his mouth shut when he feels strongly about something. Does Triple H want to welcome that sort of headache into the company? I'm just saying, that's part of the thought process, I would imagine, that probably went into this whole thing. And then when he saw that, and if he did have an issue with them not ending the match early, that could have been it. You know, their bed was made at that point. And it's a shame because they've got this emphasis on tag team wrestling. I liked what I saw. I thought they actually had a pretty good match with the Ascension. This is the best Ascension match I've seen on NXT. It was actually a competitive match instead of a one-sided squash. The fans were into them. This was their first appearance. You can't tell me that all 500 people in that Full Sail arena knew who these guys were. Some of them did. A lot of them probably didn't. But they were cheering for them. They were into them. It was their first match. So it's too bad. I think they would have been a nice addition to the tag team division. But that's the update on the American Wolves. It looks like they'll be doing their thing elsewhere. I don't even know if they'll stay together. I think Davey now has a deal with Evolve. He'll be wrestling there. There was interest from TNA. These guys could very well still end up in TNA. They could end up on TV for a different company. Let's talk about NXT, the most recent episode from New Year's. It was a New Year's Day episode of NXT. And by the way, thank you to everybody who pointed out the move I mentioned in last week's review that Antonio Cesaro used on William Regal in their match. That move is called the Stretch Muffler, which I was not aware of. It is also called the Brock Lock, when Brock Lesnar used to use it, and that I did know. So I don't know why I didn't put two and two together and think of the Brock Lock. I don't know how I forgot about that. But thank you to the many, many, many people who wrote in to correct me. Alexander Rusev beat Kofi Kingston by submission with his move, the Accolade, which is basically a glorified camel clutch. As I said earlier, they wouldn't put somebody like Rusev over a main roster guy like Kofi unless they had big things planned for him. At least I don't think they would. So that's probably good news for him. The thing about Rusev, I do have to say, though, he needs a change in wardrobe badly. That Tarzan outfit ain't going to fly on TV. So when he makes his way up eventually, he's got to have different gear, because I don't see that working. Emma beat Natalya by submission with the Emma Lock to become the number one contender for the NXT Women's title. Match included an inverted surfboard stretch by Natty that looked absolutely brutal. Brutal as in, thank God I'm not in that hold. I don't know why we've never seen her use that move on TV before. It's an awesome move. You know, clearly this woman is holding back on us. And I don't know if that's her choice or if that's just, you know, WWE doesn't want her doing moves like that on TV. But she needs to start incorporating it into her matches. That and any other cool-looking submissions that she has. I'm a big fan of AJ's Black Widow submission. I'd like to see more submissions incorporated into Divas matches. You know, toughen them up a little bit more. Toughen up their matches a bit. So we had two main roster stars putting over NXT stars, and they both did so by tap out, which I think is pretty cool, actually, to see them coming down and doing that. That's a big deal, you know, for Emma to beat Natalya, who's been featured on TV quite a bit, thanks to Total Divas. Kofi, you know, say what you want to about how Kofi's been used of late, but Kofi still has been a tag team champion, intercontinental champion. He's been on the WrestleMania card before. He's done some pretty cool stuff in Royal Rumbles and Money in the Bank matches. He's got a nice resume for himself, and for Rusev just to demolish him the way he did is pretty impressive stuff. We had a sing-off, Aiden English and Colin Cassidy, Big Cass, in a suit. Sadly, no Enzo Amore in his hover round this week. Surprisingly good segment this was. The fans did not cheer for Aiden English. I said earlier, all they do, they love cheering for Tyler Breeze. Aiden English is very similar in that I'm pretty sure the guy's a heel, where he's supposed to be. More often than not, the fans will cheer for him, and they'll chant encore when his match is over because they want to hear him sing. This was the first time I've seen him on NXT in a segment where the fans actually did not go against the grain. They did not cheer for him. They cheered Big Cass. They booed Aiden English. Probably more because they really like Enzo and Big Cass, I would guess. It was the first real chance, though, we've had to see Colin Cassidy's personality shine through. You know, it was on full display here. And not for nothing, the guy is a pretty good singer. So he got to sing a little bit. He did some mic work. The fans were into it. And that's something we need to see more of. You know, Enzo's got the broken leg. I don't know how often he'll be on TV. He was in that one segment last week in a wheelchair, but I don't know if he's going to, you know, pretty much just stay off TV from now on. He's got another few months before he can come back, so this is Colin Cassidy's chance to shine here in the absence of Enzo Amore. He's got to get out there and start showing more of his personality, and I think this was a big first step in that direction. Speaking of Tyler Breeze, he was in a match against Mason Ryan, and he beat Mason Ryan in less than a minute with the beauty shot, which is his spinning heel kick. This came after Sylvester Lefort ran down to distract Mason Ryan, who had rebuffed him in an earlier backstage segment. Seems rather odd that Mason Ryan would be rumored to replace Roman Reigns in The Shield. That's another big rumor going around this week, that after Roman Reigns breaks away, they'll keep The Shield intact and just replace him with Mason Ryan, which I think is a mistake. You can't, this is not the Four Horsemen, where you can just lose one guy and plug a new guy in. You know, when The Shield breaks up, that's it. And they go on to different things. I'm not a big fan of plugging somebody new in there. Maybe it'll work. But I don't know that Mason Ryan is that guy. But I just find it weird that, you know, Mason Ryan's name has been floated around for that spot potentially. And here he is losing you know, a 1 minute match to Tyler Breeze of all people on NXT. Main event had Sami Zayn beating Leo Kruger in a 2 out of 3 falls match. 2 straight falls. So that pretty much confirms that they must be repackaging Kruger if they want to just beat him so decisively here like that. Adam Rose is the new name. He's been using it live events, doing a comedy gimmick. I talked about this already. I was never a big fan of this Leo Kruger character. This South African assassin, I guess, is kind of how he portrayed himself. So let's see how he does in the new role. I'm not even sure when the next time is we'll see him on TV. He may be out for a while, but I guess we'll find out. Finally here, on the NXT front, there was another interesting item from this week's Observer I wanted to mention. They have some new things for developmental talent down at the Performance Center, including classes and seminars. They're almost treating it like they're going to college. And when I read that, I thought, huh, it kind of goes to the heart of what I said a few months ago when I referred to it as NXT University. I don't think that's what they're calling it, but it sounds like that's essentially what it's become. It's like an NXT University for up-and-coming wrestlers. And I guess they're trying to teach them how not to fuck up their careers, you know, proper social media etiquette, and you know, a lot of the other basics, wrestling history 101. They've brought in people like Dusty Rhodes and stuff to teach them how to do promos and how to perfect their techniques on promos and find themselves and really hone their characters. It sounds like they're modeling it very much like something the NFL would do, you know, with football players and stuff like that. And I think that's actually a really cool thing, you know, teaching these guys how to market themselves. And you know, they're offering tuition reimbursement programs and media training. They're teaching them other languages, which is going to become important because as you travel the world, it would be nice if you knew more than just English. So if you knew Spanish and if you, you know, John Cena's learning Chinese, give him credit for that. That's not an easy language to learn. So the fact that they're consolidating all of these things in their developmental program and it's like they're sending them off to wrestling college, I think that's actually a really cool concept. That's actually pretty neat stuff. They've also formed a partnership with a money management company to help the wrestlers plan for their future, to teach them about, you know, budgeting and how to pick the right tax person, because doing your taxes as an independent contractor, that's something you're responsible for. And there are a lot of wrestlers, young wrestlers, who don't think about having to pay their own taxes, you know. Oh, well, that money will just get taken out automatically. Well, it doesn't work that way. You've got to crunch the numbers. You're the one who has to cut a check that you have to mail off to the Internal Revenue Service. I mean, this is stuff that, you know, some of us may not have to worry about. And if you're not taught from an early point in your career, hey, this is something you're going to be responsible for, that's when you get into trouble. And that's when the IRS comes calling saying, hey, where's my money? And believe me, you do not want that to happen. Impact Wrestling. Mike Johnson of PWInsider.com broke the news on Saturday that TNA will no longer be taping episodes of Impact at Universal Studios in Orlando, at least not anytime in the foreseeable future. All of the Universal Studios sound stages have been booked up for this year with other non-TNA shows. The final Impact tape there is going to be airing this Thursday. That's with the main event of Magnus against AJ Styles. The week after, they're live in Huntsville, Alabama for Genesis on Spike TV. They may be taping a second episode that night, and then at the end of the month, they head to Europe, where they are going to be taping a whole bunch of episodes, possibly as many as 4 Impacts they'll tape. So that gives you an idea of how long Jeff Hardy will be out, given that he's not allowed to travel there because of his criminal record. That's why they did that angle with him. So they should be good until late February, at which point, unless they can find a permanent home between now and then, and one would think that they will, but if not, they are going to be forced to take Impact back out on the road. So in a word, TNA is homeless. And if you remember the press release TNA put out when they first announced their return to Universal, there was a mention in there about them having a training center in the Orlando area or developing one. So who the hell knows what happens with that now? Maybe they'll have a traveling training center, like in a van or something. You know, the TNA party bus, they can call it. You pay them $20 and you get to sit in the back seat and get yelled at by Al Snow going down I-95 at 60 miles an hour. So suffice to say, this is not good. This is not how TNA wanted to start out the new year. And the fact that they couldn't reach a new deal with AJ Styles, their number one guy, and now they may be forced to go back out on the road, which was such a major expense for them. They got the hell off the road specifically so they could save money. That's bad. That is scary bad. And I'll say it right now. You want a prediction for 2014? I'll give you one. Here's my prediction on the future of Impact Wrestling. TNA, in its current form, I predict, will not survive the year. I just don't see how it's possible. And I know people have been predicting the impending doom of TNA for the past 11 years, and they're still around. And that's to their credit, that they have been able to survive as long as they have. Luck has had a little something to do with that, because had WWE not left Spike TV back in 2005, there would be no TNA right now. Without Spike, TNA doesn't exist. But TNA in its current form, as we know it, I just don't see how they make it to 2015. Now, let me clarify what I mean by that. You notice, I'm not predicting the death of TNA. I don't think the promotion is going to fold up and go away. What I'm saying is that, as we know it with the TNA name, under the ownership of the Carter family, it will no longer exist. That means somebody else is going to have to buy at least a controlling interest in the company, if not the entire thing outright. Maybe it's Spike TV. You know, maybe it's an outside investor. Who knows? Whatever happens, I hope they stick around. There's a lot of guys who are not going to WWE for whatever reason, who are very talented, who deserve a shot on national TV. Ring of Honor has syndicated television, but not a national TV deal. It's not the same thing. They're a nice alternative. And if anything, ROH has more momentum going into 2014 than TNA does right now, that they've added AJ Styles and Chris Hero to their roster. But still, they don't have national TV. TNA does. I don't want to see them go away. But something has to change at some point. You know, TNA is a lot like the U.S. government. You have leaders who like the sound of their own voice. They love being on camera. I feel like Dixie's all over these shows now every single week. But they don't actually get a whole lot done. And you can't print money like it's going out of style. You either have the money you need or you don't. You can pretend like nothing's wrong, or you can borrow money to pay off your debts or whatever, but all you're doing is putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. That's not going to work. So I hope it all works out. I really do. I wish no ill on TNA. I know some people do. There are people who have this irrational hatred of TNA that I don't understand. I know TNA's done a lot of dumb shit before, and they've had a lot of people come and go, whether it was Russo or Hogan or Bischoff and some of the other ex-WWE guys like Booker T who came in and didn't give two shits about TNA, and they used it and they got paid and they left, and Hall and Nash and all those guys. But at the end of the day, you want to have more than just one major national wrestling promotion. And if the people running that promotion are dumb as dirt, or they don't have any idea what they're doing, or they don't have the money to do what it takes, and maybe somebody else comes along with a different vision and more money, Why would you hate on that? Maybe it's the TNA name. Like I said, maybe the name will change this year. If they get new people in there, I mean, that name has been, that brand has been so badly damaged. Changing the name might just be something that company needs to move forward. You know, cleanse people's memories of what TNA stands for. Come up with a different name, a fresh start, some new ideas, some new faces, and go from there. But in the spirit of keeping things lighthearted here, I thought I would throw it to you guys. I posted a status on Facebook when this news first broke, and I asked you guys, who could take in TNA now that they have no home? You know, TNA is like that person standing on the side of the road hitchhiking. They got one thumb in the air and seemingly the other thumb stuck up their ass. Who could take in TNA and give them a home? And I want to share some of those responses with you right now. And also, I want this on the podcast for posterity, because mixed in with all the comedy answers here are some legitimate ideas for where TNA may be able to go. And if it turns out that one of you guys are right on the money, I'll be more than happy to give you a shout out here on the Sound Off. First up, we have our very own Brian Blade. He is offering his backyard to TNA for future events. That's awfully nice of him. Brian Rounds says the WWE Performance Center. It's actually not a bad idea. I think the Performance Center is big enough. They've got like 7 rings. Surely you can give TNA one of them. David Levitt says Center Stage in Atlanta or the Nashville Fairgrounds, which was actually their original home, the TNA Asylum. That was where Ring of Honor just had an event last night, in fact, with AJ Styles' big return. Blake Buchanan, they could do it in hell, because that's where this company is going anyways. Okay, well, that's a possibility, I guess. Bring sunscreen. Ryan Landrum says, anybody know any middle schools or bingo hall openings? Hey, ECW did very well for themselves in bingo halls. Don't be knocking bingo halls now. Jennifer Devereaux says the poorhouse. That's undoubtedly true. Michael Connolly, what about the Hammerstein Ballroom? Actually, there were a few people who said this. The Hammerstein is part of the Manhattan Center. They're one and the same. The Hammerstein Ballroom is on the first level when you walk right in, and then eight flights up is the Grand Ballroom, which is where Raw used to air back in 93, and Ring of Honor has also had a whole bunch of shows there. I've been there because every time we would go, it would be a race up the stairs. They have an elevator. It's like a very tiny-ass elevator. So all of us, like idiots, would just run up eight flights of stairs. And so you can imagine you've got all of these wrestling fans who are not exactly in the best of shape. When they finally reach the eighth floor, they got their hands and their knees hunched over, huffing and puffing. It's the funniest thing. But you know what? Hammerstein, that would be a really cool setting for TNA to call home. I just don't see it happening, though. I don't see it happening because I can't imagine they'll be able to afford the Hammerstein Ballroom, number one. And number two, I would imagine the Hammerstein's probably all booked up for most of 2014. I can't imagine TNA being able to get regular dates in that building, so I don't know how realistic that is. Dennis Newman offers this suggestion, TNA YMCA. Jeremy Winters, Macon, Georgia at the Centerplex. They filmed several episodes here about 2 years ago. Brian Tymeyer says the Cincinnati Gardens in Cincinnati, Ohio. They also taped some episodes of Impact there in the past. Timu, oh, I'm not even going to try to pronounce this last name. I will butcher your last name, so we'll just say Timu, says TNA in your house, literally. That's a pretty good one, actually. Adam Valencia, how about Universal Studios in Los Angeles? That's another good one. I don't know what the deal is with events there, but I know that when they were considering possible locations to bring Impact permanently, Vegas was one that was thought of very closely until they made the decision to stick to the East Coast. And I think part of the decision to stick to the East Coast was also an issue of expense. I think it would cost them more money to have to fly guys back and forth from East to West every single week or every single time anyway they would do tapings. If that's the case, I don't see how LA would really make much sense for them, but it's possible. It certainly is possible. Jeremy Jacobs, the cemetery. TNA is dead anyway. Steve Wysocki, Dixie's new bombshell announcement could be bringing TNA tapings to you, introducing weddings or birthday parties. Well, don't forget bar mitzvahs either. Guybrush Threepwood. Wow. What a name that is. Sounds like an NXT name. TNA should join a carnival like the old days of wrestling. That'd be pretty interesting. Back to the carny days. Get the elephants and the horses and the monkeys. Do they have monkeys at the carnivals? I don't know. I haven't been to a carnival in a long time. Glenn Warnicky, CFE Arena, which is a college arena in Orlando, holds about 10,000 people. Well, that's way too many. But he says, holds about 10,000 people, and it's about 30 minutes from the old Impact Zone in Universal's theme park. Brian Green, Atlanta has opened up three or four new studio/soundstages, Screen Gems, Pinewood, and others. I would scout out those locations immediately if I were Dixie Carter. And I also want to give a hat tip here to Justin Santiago. He created an image that you can find on my Twitter of an empty Blockbuster video store. Of course, Blockbuster, for those who don't know, formerly a very popular video rental chain here in this country. Well, the days of going to Blockbuster to rent the VHS, those days have been over for a long time. I didn't even know they still had Blockbuster stores, but apparently they did, and now they're all going out of business. So Justin put this great image together of an empty Blockbuster video store with a banner that reads, Impact Wrestling Lives Here Now. I had a thought that nobody else brought up. By the way, thanks to everybody who submitted. There were over 100 posts. I couldn't list them all. But I had a thought that nobody else has brought up. What about TNA at Medieval Times? They have one out in New Jersey, not far from here. I went when I was a kid. They could have Magnus ride in on a horse and joust for the title with Samoa Joe. Oh, that poor horse. maybe that's not such a good idea after all. Maybe we could leave Joe off the horse. But everybody, you know, all the fans, they get to sit around with crowns on their heads, eating fried chicken with their hands. That's my idea of fun. I would totally go to a TNA show like that. Take my money now. If I could sit there and eat fried chicken with my hands and watch wrestlers joust with giant swords on horseback. Just saying. It's an idea. You got to think outside the box here, right? You want to do wrestling differently? Back in the day, they did a six-sided ring. It would certainly be different. You got to admit that. The other thing I wanted to mention here was the idea that some people had of TNA just moving their operations to the UK and just making the UK their permanent base. Like, they're going to be going on a UK tour in a couple of weeks. They're still very, very popular there. I had this debate when I appeared on WrestleView's international desk. We did a whole show together, me and the host, and actually the full audio of that is up on our YouTube channel if you want to go back and check it out. But if I remember correctly, I think he was insisting that it would be a good idea for TNA to consider doing something like that, and I disagreed. And I still disagree. I think that would be a very bad idea, and here's why. First of all, this is a company, I've said this before, that can barely afford bread. So the idea that they're going to be able to move their operations, or at the very least, go overseas to the UK multiple times a year and tape a whole bunch of episodes of Impact is comical. It's laughable to me. That's number one. Number two, I don't care how popular they are overseas, and this goes for WWE too. WWE has gone to places in Europe, Italy a few years ago, that for whatever reason were just hotbeds for wrestling. Okay, and they would go over there, they would sell out, the fans were rabid, they couldn't wait for those guys to go over there. And it's kind of like that now with TNA. The thing is, though, the more often you go, right, the less rabid those fans are going to be. Part of the reason I'm sure that the fans in the UK love TNA so much and they're so desperate for TNA action is because they get one tour every single year. The guys are there for like 3 weeks, maybe, 2-3 weeks, and that's it. You start going every month, you start going with some consistency, I guarantee you within a few months, within 3 months, they won't be able to fill a fucking flea market over there. So that's number one. Number two, there's a lot of other issues involved here that people don't think about. You've got issues with work visas. You've got tax issues. Okay, and a lot of these things would take time to resolve themselves. You can't just snap your fingers and, okay, this guy has a work visa. This has worked out. Okay, good. There's a lot of things that are going to cost TNA a lot of money. Money they don't have. So this idea that, oh, why don't they just go to the UK? It's not that simple. It's not going to work. If it works, it'll work for a couple of months. And then you're just going to kill that territory. And now that one place that you had that loved TNA so much, and maybe you were selling out or coming close to selling out events, like I said, all of a sudden, those crowds, a lot smaller than they used to be, not as vocal, and you'll just kill it. You'll kill it dead. So I disagree. I don't think that's a good idea. And it doesn't matter anyway, because they can't afford to do it. Nor do I imagine that somebody like Sting, for example, would be all that enamored with the idea of having to fly back and forth to the UK multiple times every single year. Let's talk about Impact this week. I actually thought overall it was a good show. I enjoyed it. Here's what you need to know. Here's the key stuff. AJ Styles returned to confront Magnus during his coronation ceremony. He challenged him to a winner-take-all unification match on next week's show. AJ was out there with a toy replica belt, just like John Cena. If you remember, Cena beat Rey Mysterio on Raw once for the belt. This was right before CM Punk came back, and they kind of blew their load on that whole angle. I remember watching that, and I remember thinking, boy, that belt Cena has looks awfully thin and stiff. Yeah, because it was a toy belt. So that's what I thought of when I saw AJ's belt here. He clearly had the fake. Speaking of Styles, I should mention this now. He made his big return to Ring of Honor last night at their TV tapings in Nashville. I think his match with Roderick Strong was taped for episode number 4, which means it would air on February 1st, I believe, whatever that Saturday would be. And a little spoiler alert here, okay, for those of you who don't want to know what happened with that match, skip ahead. Styles' first night back, and he nearly killed Roderick Strong on a Styles Clash. And it wasn't AJ's fault. I really shouldn't say that. It really wasn't his fault. It appeared to be Roderick Strong's fault for whatever reason. He decided to tuck his head in when taking that move, which is the absolute wrong way to take a Styles Clash. And what ended up happening is he landed right on his head and his neck. It kind of, you know, bent to the side. somebody shot video of it and posted it on Instagram. I have it up on my Twitter right now. It looked really, really sick. Styles got the pin. He won the match. Strong had to be helped to the back where he, you know, appeared to be okay. He was lucid and able to walk on his own. He's going to be seeing his doctor on Monday. So probably by the time most of you have already listened to this, for further evaluations. So there's no update until he sees the doctor. And hopefully, you know, when it comes to the neck, that's something you don't want to mess with. So hopefully he's okay. Chris Sabin beat Austin Aries to regain his X Division title. And then after the match, he did his best Owen Hart impersonation. Jeremy Borash, when the match was over, he pulled him aside outside the ring for an interview. And Sabin teased thanking Velvet Sky for helping him win. And then he swerved everybody and thanked himself instead. And then he shouted, "I did it!" in the most dramatic fashion possible. He sounded exactly like Owen. It was eerie. Aries really looked like a goofball here in this match. During the match, Sabin had been screaming at Velvet Sky to get up on the apron and help him, and she was just saying, "No, I'm not going to do it." So finally, she relents, and she does it. She gets up on the apron, and sure enough, that idiot, Austin Aries, falls for it. She didn't even do anything. You've never seen someone so disinterested in getting up on the ring apron. And yet, Aries was all like, "What are you doing up here?" And that kind of gave Sabin a chance to low blow him for the pin. And you know what? He deserved to lose for being stupid. We also got a one-night beer money reunion on this show. Bobby Roode and James Storm were reluctant partners against Kurt Angle and Gunner. Roode wanted no part of Storm as his partner, and Storm lobbied him for it because he badly wanted to get his hands on Gunner. And they won, too. The way his career has been going lately, I'm sure James Storm would love to reunite Beer Money. I can't say I'd blame him if he felt that way. Roode's better than that, though, so hopefully they don't go in that direction. Finally, they found Sam Shaw, or Samuel Shaw, I guess it is now. This is his first match with this new creepy boyfriend character that he's got going. I think he and Christy Hemme are still supposedly dating, I think. So, he came to the ring dressed in street clothes, very well-dressed. His hair was all, you know, done and had mousse or gel or whatever in it. And he came down with black gloves that he put on only once he was inside the ring. And he destroyed Norv Fernum, TNA's resident job guy. Very short match. Although Norv Fernum actually did get some offense in, which was kind of bizarre. He won with a standing choke. And so that may be his finishing maneuver, I guess we'll see. And I see people online saying, "Oh, this guy's a Dexter ripoff." I never watched Dexter. I know what Dexter looks like. I just never watched it. So I'll take your word for it. And then you have another contingent of people who insist, no, he's ripping off Christian Bale in American Psycho. I watched this match and thought he was ripping off Randy Orton more than anyone else with that power slam, that scoop power slam that Orton does, and that backbreaker that Orton does. So that was my first thought. Whoever he's patterning himself after, though, I like it. The Orton thing aside. What he reminded me of when he walked down to the ring, I actually didn't think right away of Dexter or American Psycho. I thought about that later. My first thought when I saw him come down and the way he was very protective, overprotective of Christy Hemme. You know, she's in the ring doing the ring announcing. He kind of grabs her by the arm and just escorts her out of the ring and says, "Okay, you're going to sit here now." And what I thought about was, and I haven't seen anybody else mention this, I thought of Mark Wahlberg in the movie Fear. That character scared the shit out of me when I first saw that movie. Back in the mid-90s, he plays a violently obsessive boyfriend. And when I say violent, I do mean violent. He didn't wear black gloves, but that's what I thought of. I would use some sympathetic characters, maybe like Eric Young and maybe even Joseph Park, as things progress here, maybe to get this guy over as a sadistic heel. Because when you have a guy like this, clearly he's psychotic. He's out of his mind. And he's got a violent streak to him that maybe Christy is, for whatever reason, completely unaware of or just doesn't care. Maybe she likes them. Maybe she likes the bad guys. I don't know. But the easiest way to get heat on somebody as a heel is to put him in there with guys that the fans absolutely love and adore and can have sympathy for and have this guy just destroy them. It's actually kind of similar. That was the mentality behind back in 01 when the two-man power trip killed the Hardys and Lita, Team Extreme. They turned Austin heel at WrestleMania. People still didn't want to boo him. And they thought, okay, how can we get this guy over once and for all as a heel? What can we possibly do to make this guy just the worst person in the world? And they did that angle, which I actually went back recently on YouTube and watched it. And it's like, wow. You talk about how wrestling has changed from then to now. Go back and watch that segment. That's pretty heavy stuff. I mean, they beat the crap out of Lita. Triple H just pounded the crap out of her and gave her a pedigree. Austin had some sick chair shots to the Hardys. He beat Lita over the back with a chair when she laid over Matt's body to protect him. And they did that because the Hardys were so beloved and Lita was so beloved. They were the perfect people to use in an angle like that. So on a much smaller level here, granted, I think they could do something similar with this guy. Putting him in there with Norv Fernum, nobody gives a fuck about Norv Fernum. Okay, nobody knows anything about the guy. He's an idiot. He comes out there. He looks like a fool. He deserves to be beaten. Eric Young, Joseph Park, these are characters that people like. They love them. They have sympathy for them. I have sympathy every time poor Joe Park gets bullied around by bad influence. So I can imagine if Samuel Shaw went in there and did something so heinous to this guy. You know, that's just one idea. It's one way to get him over as a heel. We had a segment where Ethan Carter III came out to challenge Jeff Hardy to a match, even though he knew Jeff Hardy was not there. And when he demanded that the referee count him out and award him the win, that's when Sting made his way to the ring, and Sting called him Dixie's lapdog, and he used a lot of this reverse psychology stuff to kind of get in EC3's head, because EC3 has been ducking Sting's challenge now for weeks. And finally, he goaded him into accepting a match, and the two of them are going to have a match at Genesis on January 16th. So Ethan Carter will finally go one-on-one with Sting. Bully Ray was scheduled to wrestle Joe Park. Yes, he is still doing the deal where he insists that he is not Abyss. So I don't know how much longer they're going to drag this out, but Joe Park lives. So Bully walks up to Joe Park after Eric Young walks away. He sees him backstage and he goes, "Joe, you don't want to go out to the ring, because if you do, I'm going to set you on fire." And he walks away. And that's exactly what he tried to do once Joseph Park went to the ring for their match. He doused him with lighter fluid before Ken Anderson ran out to make the save. He also got doused with lighter fluid, Bully T setting him on fire. And then he just left. He almost murdered these two men in front of an audience of, I was going to say millions, but a million. But he just walked away. So the only thing I got out of this segment, given the way that he was dressed, you know, Bully Ray comes out now, he's got the hoodie, he's got the hood over his head, sunglasses, he's threatening to set people on fire. What I take away from this is that Bully Ray's new gimmick is that of an emo teenager. I'm waiting for the vignette from his house where he's in his bedroom, you know, cutting a really serious dark promo, and then all of a sudden he gets interrupted by his mother. You know, that dinner's ready. And then he rips off his sunglasses and gets all angry. And he's like, "I'll be down in a minute, Ma." At least we didn't have to listen to that god-awful background dramatic music this week like we did last week. So that was a plus. At least they ditched the music for 1 week. So the next live Impact will be Genesis on January 16th in Huntsville, Alabama. We've got Kurt Angle against Bobby Roode in a steel cage match, which scares the crap out of me. Because you just know Kurt's going to want to do a moonsault off the top, and I do not want to see him do that. He needs to win, or else he will never be inducted into the TNA Wrestling Hall of Fame. And by the way, what a stupid storyline that is. You know, looking at how things now have progressed in retrospect, it came off really dumb when Kurt first rejected his induction at the time. But you could tell, okay, they wanted to do like a redemption storyline with him, but now he comes out, he talks about how he has to prove himself worthy. I just think the whole thing is dumb. You know, as if anybody in the world watching thinks that Kurt is not worthy of being in the Hall of Fame, especially the TNA Wrestling Hall of Fame, which has one person in it anyway. Sting will wrestle Ethan Carter III, as I predicted weeks ago. I figured it would be on that show. Absolutely no reason for Sting to win that match. So whether EC3 cheats his way to a win or whatever, at this point, the best role for Sting in TNA, if he's going to stay, is putting people over, putting new guys over that they're trying to build around. And EC3 is one of those guys. So is Magnus, and Sting put him over at Bound for Glory. So I see no reason for Ethan Carter not to win that match. I mean, I'm not saying Sting, for the duration of his run in TNA, should never again win a match. But this is a big match for EC3. I think he needs to win this. And I get that his gimmick is that he's a chicken shit who only beats scrubs. But at some point, he needs to beat somebody legitimate. And Sting's about as legit as it gets in TNA in terms of big names. You'll also notice they're not blowing off the Magnus-AJ match on this live edition of Impact in 2 weeks. Instead, they're doing it on another taped Impact coming up this Thursday, not the Genesis show. They knew they had to get that match done because his contract was expiring. So for all the people who still insist that this whole thing is just a work and AJ is coming back, he's still under contract to TNA, I think that's one big piece of evidence to the contrary. But the people who think it's a work, I mean, you're never going to convince them otherwise, so what's the point? So there's not a whole lot of buzz, positive buzz, I should say, around TNA these days. Whatever buzz there has been is just bad. Bad buzz with AJ leaving and Jeff Jarrett leaving and now them being homeless and all. That's kind of a bad thing. Hopefully, you know, with their focus on the new guys, which I talked about at length last week, I gave praise to TNA for that. You know, Rockstar Spud and his role is very good. EC3, they're pushing him. Magnus, they're giving him the ball to see how far he can run with it. Samuel Shaw is a character that intrigues me. That's a good thing. That's a positive thing. And then when you add in the UK tour coming up, because they're still very hot over there, hopefully it gives them some momentum. Hopefully it gives them something to build on. But when it comes to stuff like, you know, losing out on Universal Studios and possibly having to go back out on the road, it just, you know, it's just like, it's always one step forward and then two steps back with this company. And it's frustrating. It's very frustrating. So hopefully things will turn around. I don't know how they do that, but hopefully they'll turn it around. Let's move on to the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. That includes audio questions. You can send me MP3 attachments, preferably no more than 30 seconds. And always make sure in your emails to include your name and where you are from. Binder, from Wisconsin. I'm not sure if you've discussed this or not, but what would you think of the idea of Hulk Hogan back at WrestleMania 30 to do some sort of in-ring interaction with the Real Americans? Well, I actually did discuss this, and I think the Real Americans would be perfect for this. And it's funny that, you know, I got this question this week from Binder. I actually got a lot of questions about Hulk Hogan, and there's been a lot of rumors out there about Hogan possibly being at Mania. What, you know, will he wrestle? Is he going to just do something in a non-physical role? Pro Wrestling Insider this week had an item on Hulk Hogan that him appearing at Mania in a substantial role is still very much being discussed in WWE. I don't know if he actually has signed anything with them or not. My understanding is that he has not. But they're certainly discussing potential ideas for him with the idea that he'll probably be at WrestleMania. At this point, I would be shocked if he wasn't. I don't know why he wouldn't be. And WrestleMania 30, I mean, say what you want to about Hulk Hogan, and God knows I have. I don't think he did hardly anything positive during his time in TNA. And he was on television way too much. But when you have an event like WrestleMania 30, and they'll call it the 30th anniversary. Technically, it really isn't. 31 is. But it's a big deal. 30 years since the original WrestleMania where he headlined. He headlined that show with Roddy Piper, and Hogan was not at WrestleMania 10. He was not at WrestleMania 20. So it would be appropriate for him to make an appearance at WrestleMania 30, especially if that was his final appearance. That's the place to do it. You know, that's the time to do it in front of a big crowd, 70,000 people. And I'm looking on PWI at some of these ideas, these purported ideas that are being discussed for Hogan, and I'm seeing that there's been an idea pitched for, you know, Hulk Hogan against Roddy Piper. Piper may have pitched the idea of a match between the two of them. That sounds absolutely horrific. I don't want to see Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper one-on-one. There's been other ideas where hooking up Hogan with Cena in some kind of tag team match against maybe Piper and some other heel on the roster. I don't like any of those ideas, to be honest with you. I just don't. My idea all along was Hogan needs to be on WrestleMania, and a good role for him would be as the host. This host concept, they're very, you know, they're not consistent with it. It's not like every big pay-per-view now has a host. I know they had Miz host SummerSlam, but I'm thinking Rock. They had Rock come back in 2011 to kick off that program with Cena, and he hosted WrestleMania that year. And the main event of WrestleMania back in 2011 was John Cena against The Miz. WrestleMania that year did over 1 million buys. I guarantee, I'd bet my left nut that John Cena versus The Miz did not draw a million buys at WrestleMania. It was The Rock being there as the host. And The Rock was a much bigger star than Hogan at that point. He hadn't been in the company in 8 years. It's a different situation. But I think Hogan, if you're going to do a non-wrestling role with him, you could do two things. Number one, he hosts WrestleMania, so that way you can at least announce him in advance. He's not just showing up for a random segment with the Real Americans. You announce in advance, you start airing videos, you know, with Real American. Hulk Hogan's coming back, brother. He's going to be at WrestleMania, you know, back home where it all began. And I think Hogan would probably be fairly entertaining in that role if you kept it limited, you know. You keep him limited to, like, one opening segment at the beginning of the show and maybe one or two backstage segments. And then you can do a segment later on where there is some sort of interaction with him and the Real Americans. I mean, I would hate it if Cesaro didn't have a match on the show because I remember last year at WrestleMania 29, you know, which I attended, and I went to all the events, you know, Access and the Hall of Fame was actually very nice at Madison Square Garden. But I remember the day of WrestleMania, they were still having Access sessions right up until showtime. And if I remember correctly, Antonio Cesaro was sitting in on an Access session when WrestleMania was about to begin. And WWE on their website in the week or two leading up to WrestleMania, they were airing a video package dedicated to Cesaro showing him in training for WrestleMania. And I remember joking on that group sound-off I did with Noah Mark and Brian Blade. I said, I don't know, maybe they were referring to WrestleMania 30 instead of 29. I don't know what he's in training for since he's sitting on his ass signing autographs, and he was the United States champion at the time, and WrestleMania is about to go on the air. And I don't think Cesaro ended up having a match on the show. So I personally would love for him to have a match announced in advance, but even if they didn't, you know, having him and Swagger in there to do something with Hogan would be a big deal. You know, that would be a big segment on the show. And I don't know how limited Hogan is physically. The guy can barely walk. I don't imagine he can do much other than throwing some punches. And even throwing punches. I mean, his back, I mean, he's got to be in such rough shape that even throwing punches, I'd imagine he'd want to be by the ropes so he can hold on in case he falls over. This is a guy who only a few years ago wrestled Ric Flair in a match in Australia and took, if you could even call it a bump, and his hip went out. He's very fragile. So I would hope that he can at least do something like that. And one idea that I had, and I just put this out there, and I know it's probably completely unrealistic. I'm sure this other guy would not want to work with Hogan. But the Ultimate Warrior is probably going to be involved in WrestleMania in some way, even if it's just a Hall of Fame induction. He's the number one name now that pops up when, you know, you talk about Hall of Fame and potential people to be inducted this year. Never has he been on better terms than he is right now with WWE. He's at least on amicable terms with them. So if Warrior is going to be there, and Warrior is going to be announced as a Hall of Famer, and which means he'll probably be at WrestleMania, and he'll come out before the crowd, why not do something where Hogan, as the host, comes out later on for a segment, Real Americans come out, maybe they're upset that they don't have a match, and they take umbrage with Hogan calling himself, you know, Hogan's theme music is really, oh, you're not a real American, we're real Americans, and, you know, they surround him and they're threatening to beat him up. And then the Ultimate Warrior's music hits, and out comes the Warrior to help Hulk Hogan beat up on the Real Americans. And I know the image of these two old guys, these two broken down old guys, and Warrior's still in good shape, but still, he's 50-something years old. I know the image of them beating up Antonio Cesaro and Jack Swagger is completely ludicrous, but it's pro wrestling. And sometimes, when it comes to special segments like this, you just have to accept it for what it is. I think that that could actually be a pretty cool moment. You kind of recreate WrestleMania 8, where Warrior came down to save Hogan. I think if you're going to have them both in the same building, you may as well try to do something with both of them. And I think the image of Hogan and Warrior out there, then when the segment is over, raising each other's arm and posing maybe and doing some stuff like that would be pretty cool, I think, for the fans in attendance. So you get your limited dose of Hogan and Warrior, and they both end up looking like the conquering heroes when it's over, and you move on from there. I kind of like that idea. Again, I don't know that Warrior would want to do anything with Hogan, and maybe Hogan wouldn't want to have anything to do with Warrior, but it's an idea. And then there's this idea from one of our listeners, John. Another idea that is potentially very intriguing, and I put this out there. He doesn't think that John Cena and Bray Wyatt, if they wrestle at WrestleMania, is going to be one-on-one. He says the current storyline has Bryan as a Wyatt, but he thinks after the Rumble, once Cena loses to Randy Orton, that John Cena will become heavily involved in the Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt angle, with Cena trying to convince Bryan to break away from them. So this is what John proposes. He said, after beatdown from the Wyatts to Cena, Bryan mans up and saves John Cena, but still, it's 3-on-2. Cue Hulk Hogan, who slowly makes his way out for the save. Suspend your disbelief, he says. And he helps clear the ring. And then a 6-man tag is made for WrestleMania, where the Wyatt family battles Daniel Bryan, John Cena, and Hulk Hogan. So in a 6-man tag, you know, Hogan doesn't have much to do. Bryan and Cena can do all the heavy lifting. And Hogan can come in for his trademark spot, and then he can pose in the end, and it's a feel-good moment for all the fans. That's another interesting possibility there. That certainly would be a high-profile match for Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. And Cena, Bryan on the same team with Hogan. I mean, Hulk Hogan and Daniel Bryan on the same team. It's kind of a mind-blowing thought. But it's possible. It's a creative idea, I think. So that comes from John. There was one report this week, I mentioned Daniel Bryan, that said The Undertaker has specifically asked to work with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania this year. Now, there was a report several weeks ago, I think it may have been WrestleZone, that talked of a possible Taker versus Bryan match for Mania, but that got laughed off, and rightfully so, because it said Undertaker would be the heel in that match. There's no way Undertaker is going heel in a match with Daniel Bryan. But, you know, face versus face, or Undertaker versus Bryan as a heel, if he's still doing the deal with the Wyatts, I could see that. Thing is, though, as of right now, the top 4 planned matches for WrestleMania are as follows. John Cena and Bray Wyatt, Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, Triple H and CM Punk, and Randy Orton against Batista. Those are believed to be the 4 top matches on the books right now for WrestleMania 30. Now, if that's true, that's a slap in the face to Daniel Bryan. It's bad enough the way they abandoned the whole title chase storyline with him, but to not even have him factored into any of the top matches at WrestleMania, where the hell does he fit in? If you don't include him with any of those guys, where does he fit in on the card at WrestleMania? I mean, I guess you could do a singles match with Sheamus as a heel, if Sheamus is ready to come back at that point. That was one of the ideas I pitched for Sheamus, but that was months ago. And I thought probably by Rumble time, he would already be back. He could hook up with the Authority, or not hook up with the Authority, but go heel, because it would freshen the character, and storyline-wise, it makes sense. The spot that Sheamus hurt his shoulder on in that Money in the Bank match was from Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan pushed him over, and you could argue that Daniel Bryan's the one responsible for his injury. He's the one responsible for taking months away from his career. So it would make sense, which is probably why they won't do it. But if Sheamus is ready to come back, what does he do? Well, if Bryan has no match, you've got a built-in story with them right there. And Bryan and Sheamus, I mean, they've had some great matches. So if you're looking for a good wrestling match, you're going to get that. But I'm talking in terms of story. Because other than that, I don't know what the hell you do with the guy. That's why I don't mind the idea of Undertaker Daniel Bryan, or even a tag with, you know, Cena, Bryan, and Hogan, because at least it gets Bryan in a spot high up on the card, which he deserves. You know, he's busted his ass the past year, and he really stepped up, and the crowds have responded to him, and it's time to reward that. So when I saw those top 4 matches, I mean, it really bothered me. How can you not include this guy who up until recently has been the number 2 most popular babyface in the entire company? And some might even say number 1. To me, Cena is still in that top spot, but you could argue, you know, they've gone back and forth. How you don't have him factored into one of your top 4 matches on the card at WrestleMania? Either that whole card is complete BS, and the reports are completely false, and I'm sure there is some truth to them, or they don't know what the hell they're doing. So hopefully he ends up in a pretty high spot. He doesn't have to be in the main event. I accept the fact that he's probably not challenging for the title. I've just given up all hope as far as that goes for WrestleMania, because they've got so many other big names and big matches. But he at least deserves to be in some sort of high-profile match. Johnny writes in, I've been thinking about some of the comments you and other listeners have made about Triple H often failing to put over young and new talent, and it got me thinking of his feud in 2004 with Shelton Benjamin, where he lost three times in a row, the first of which was via pinfall. My question isn't so much about Triple H as much as the angle. Do you agree that this sort of booking is not used often enough? To me, WWE is far too reluctant to allow occasional shock finishes like that, which go a long way to giving new stars credibility without harming the established top star too much in the right circumstances. And can you remember any of these other occasions in recent years? Recently, no. I can't think of any of them recently, but the most famous in WWE has to be the angle with 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon, which was 20 years ago, or actually over 20 years ago. That probably is the most famous one. Ramon was pretty high up on the card. He wasn't main event level at that point, although he had worked main event level. You know, when Ramon first came in, he was a main event guy. You know, he worked the Survivor Series tag team match with Ric Flair as his partner against, you know, Mr. Perfect and Randy Savage. He worked the title match at the Royal Rumble in 93 against Bret Hart with a knee injury, no less. And then he kind of found his place in the mid-card at the Intercontinental level, even though he didn't win the Intercontinental title for many more months. So when the 1-2-3 Kid beat him, fair and square, pinned him on Raw, people reacted. Place went nuts. The announcers went nuts. Ramon sold it great. It was this, even the 1-2-3 Kid, he couldn't believe he won. The way that whole thing was played was just perfect. That's probably the most famous in that company's history. And then, you know, they also did something when John Cena first came up. When Cena first came up in his first match on SmackDown, he had a very competitive match against Kurt Angle. So, in a way, I guess he kind of already established himself as a player, but he transitioned into a feud with Chris Jericho where he beat Jericho. He might have actually beaten Jericho more than once. He might have beaten him on TV first and then on pay-per-view. I think it was Vengeance. And that was also made to be a pretty shocking thing that this guy came up and he beat Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho was the first ever undisputed champion. He had only won the title, you know, less than a year earlier. He had beaten Stone Cold and The Rock. Jericho headlined WrestleMania that year, and here he is losing to this guy named John Cena, who came out wearing basic boots and wrestling trunks. There was nothing overly spectacular about the guy. So, I mean, that's not quite as memorable as the 1-2-3 Kid Ramon stuff, but that's how far back I'd have to go in my memory bank in WWE to remember there being a really shocking win by a newcomer, either in his debut match or, you know, he's a rookie. I mean, they did this deal with Bo Dallas, which, boy, looking back on that, I don't know what the hell the point of that was, being that they sent him right back down to developmental. But they had Bo Dallas. I think it might have been in that 40-man Rumble. Maybe no. Actually, you know what? I take that back. It might have actually been this past year's Rumble in 2013. They put him in there. I think he won some kind of match to earn a spot in the Royal Rumble. And I think he eliminated Wade Barrett, and then he beat him again in a match on Raw. Then Barrett beat him up, like, on SmackDown or something. And it went nowhere. It went absolutely nowhere. He never challenged Barrett for the Intercontinental title, never won the Intercontinental title. That was kind of shocking, I guess. Maven eliminating The Undertaker in the Royal Rumble was very shocking. That's actually one of the greatest moments in Rumble history, but that's not a match. I'm thinking in terms of matches. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. And I do think, you know, doing an angle like that every now and then, you don't want to do it too often. Absolutely. They don't do them often enough. Clearly. I have to go back 12 years to think of one. You know, so I think if you have the right people, absolutely, it could be very effective in helping to get somebody over. You just want to make sure you're doing it with the right person. I could see somebody like Sami Zayn when he's ready to come up to the main roster. I don't see them doing vignettes for this guy like they did for Carlito and Alberto Del Rio and some of these other people. I mean, what kind of vignettes are you going to do with this guy? I could see them doing a deal where in a random match on Raw, And it would kind of stick out because they don't do jobber matches anymore, but work with me here. They have a match on Raw. They announce this guy, Sami Zayn, and he's in there with some other big established name on the roster, preferably a heel. I'd like to see him work as a face when he comes up. And he has either a competitive, slightly competitive match, or maybe he just gets the shit kicked out of him. But in the end, he gets a big win. And he could be like the modern-day version of what 1-2-3 Kid was back then. You know, they could do something like that. That could be the way they introduce him when he's ready to come up to the main roster. Joshua from Victorville, California. Do you think the Four Horsemen failed to get the proper spotlight for their Hall of Fame induction? Edge, of course, was well-deserving, but they put him in way too soon, and it overshadowed the Horsemen induction. Well, I mean, you have to understand. To this audience, today's audience, Edge was the bigger name. You know, maybe not bigger than Ric Flair, but the Horsemen, you know, to most of today's WWE audience, I'm willing to bet, you know, it doesn't mean the same thing to them as it would to me or to you. And Edge was one of the biggest stars in the company. He retired. I mean, he had just retired probably less than a year earlier before he was inducted. And so that's why he was positioned the way he was. I guess they felt he was the more marketable name, let's put it that way. And the whole reason the Hall of Fame exists is as a marketing vehicle. So if you're going to use the Hall of Fame as a marketing tool, you put the most marketable people in the Hall of Fame. If they put the Ultimate Warrior in the Hall of Fame this year, guess what? You're headlining with him because the Ultimate Warrior is still very marketable. That's why he was all over the 2K14 video game. Edge is more marketable to today's audience than the Four Horsemen. That's just the reality. That's just how it is. Now, were they overshadowed? I don't know about overshadowed. I mean, they deserve top billing, probably, given their place in history. But, I mean, really, what does it matter? At least they were honored. It's more than you can say for Randy Savage. At least they're in. And Flair went in twice. This comes from Mike. I had this idea I would like to run past you. With Wade Barrett doing nothing and Sheamus possible for the Royal Rumble. I haven't heard that. I don't know where you're getting that from. How about them forming a new sort of European APA? It could start at the Rumble where they run roughshod for a while and eliminate a bunch of people together. Maybe the next night on Raw they start an APA where for the right price they will be your protection and backup since they both are big guys and they like to fight. Barrett being a bare-knuckle boxing champ who likes to give bad news and Sheamus a hooligan with a 1-800 fella hotline. You call and contact them through since both angles have gone nowhere. It could get them both over with the fans, give WWE a legit badass tag team for a while, and eventually would lead to a great feud between them down the road. Well, the problem is, I think they're saving the monster spot in the Rumble this year for Roman Reigns, and you're not going to do the monster spot with two people, because if you do that, then they're going to end up eliminating everybody. I definitely don't see them doing that with Wade Barrett, I could tell you that much. Sheamus, the idea of Sheamus and Barrett as a tag team, I actually kind of like that idea. They're not doing anything with Wade Barrett. And again, go listen to my Raw review that's up on YouTube from the New Year's show this past week. I go into this whole spiel about Bad News Barrett, how it sucks, and how they're really doing a disservice to this guy. And I just can't understand what they're trying to accomplish because the material they give him is so unfunny. But Barrett has got all the tools. You know, he's a tough guy. In real life, he's a tough guy. And Sheamus comes off as this big brawling brute. And the idea of the two of them together as a badass kind of European tag team, I wouldn't do the APA. That's just copying off an old angle, like blatantly copying. And I don't need to hear JBL on commentary cracking jokes about it every week about how they're copying me and Ron. Like, I don't need to hear that. But I kind of like the idea of Barrett and Sheamus as a team. I don't know what they're going to do with Sheamus when he gets back, unless they do the Bryan thing I suggested a little bit earlier. Him as a heel against Bryan as a babyface. Barrett's on the fast road to nowhere. He's on the fast road to developmental. He may be going back down there before long. So, why not? Why not? They have a renewed focus on the tag team division. Both guys are going to need something to do. Put them together for 6 months. Let them build up some credibility as a couple of badasses, and then, yeah, you could break them up eventually, and they could have a great feud. Wade Barrett and Sheamus at one point, I mean, I'm not ashamed to say it, I thought that could be a world title main event at WrestleMania. Not the main event, but back when they had two titles, I could definitely have seen Sheamus defending the world heavyweight title against Wade Barrett. Believe it or not, there was a time where that match seemed possible. They had a whole bunch of matches on TV together. I thought they had too many of them. I think they could have promoted that as a pay-per-view title match. The idea of that now is so laughable. It just goes to what a poor job they've done with that guy. And lastly here, Adam M. wants to know, what was the very first live show you ever attended? Wow. My earliest live wrestling memory was of a Randy Savage Honky Tonk Man main event for the Intercontinental title with Jimmy Hart suspended above the ring in a shark cage. I vividly remember the shark cage because it was something I had never seen before. And I was deathly afraid for him as they lifted him up above the ring. Maybe that's why I'm afraid of heights today. But that would have been in Madison Square Garden. So when I got this question, I looked it up because I wanted to know if I could pinpoint the exact event that this took place at. Because I'm sure back then, you know, they probably did a whole loop, a whole tour where they did a whole bunch of matches with Jimmy Hart above the ring in a cage. But I wanted to narrow it down and see if there was one at the Garden. And sure enough, there was. There was a show at MSG the day after Christmas that year, which was in 1987. So December 26, 1987. It had to have been that show. I have no recollection of anything else that happened that night, only the main event. Apparently they taped a bunch of matches to air on Primetime Wrestling. I just don't remember any of them. But that would have been my first live event. I guess I'm keeping the tradition alive. The last 2 years, I've gone to the post-Christmas show at Madison Square Garden that WWE has held. That's actually pretty cool. I didn't really think about that. But if that was my first show, and then all these years later, I'm still going to the post-Christmas shows in that same building, that's pretty cool.
History has been made here!
This week, in wrestling history, 15 years ago, on January 4th, 1999, the Monday Night Wars raged on between Raw and Nitro. On Monday Night Raw, this was a taped show. So technically, Mankind became the champion at the end of 98, but it didn't air until the beginning of 99. It's kind of like those New Year's babies. They have some twins who sometimes are born in 1 year, and technically the second twin is born the next year. I don't know why I thought of that. But yeah, Mankind won the WWF title from The Rock for the very first time on Raw. This was the night where on Nitro, Eric Bischoff had Tony Schiavone talk about how, yeah, that'll put the butts in seats. And it may not have put the butts in seats, but it put people on their clicker, switching to USA Network. Both shows, you know, it's funny, I looked up the ratings for both of these shows that night. Because this was, again, in the peak of this wrestling war. And WWF was already winning handily at this point. But Raw that night did a 5.7 rating. And Nitro also did a 5 rating. So combined, wrestling at that time was doing over a 10. It was routinely doing between a 10 and an 11 cable rating every week. That's how hot wrestling was back then. But a lot of those viewers did switch over to Raw after Schiavone made that comment. Meanwhile, over on WCW Monday Nitro was the infamous finger poke of doom, where Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash had built up to this big grudge match, you know, and they were in the Georgia Dome that night. So you had a big crowd waiting for a grudge match between Hogan and Nash. Nash, who had just ended Goldberg's streak and beat him for the WCW belt, and I believe was going into that match as the babyface. And Hogan just tapped him on the chest. Nash took a bump. Hogan pinned him. It was all just a ruse. Hogan won the belt back. The original NWO reformed. And it went over like a fart in church because a few months later they just broke him up again. WCW was already on the way down at that point. This is one of those pivotal moments, though. You look back and you just shake your head. It's like, wow. You know, who thought that this would be a good idea? On a show where you know you're going up against some pretty stiff competition, there's a title change on the other show. You're in the Georgia Dome, so you probably have 40,000 people in this building. And you promote this big main event, and of all the times to pull a stunt like that, you decide, hey, this would be a good time to not give people the match we promised them and do a title change on a finger poke. Sure. What could go wrong? 14 years ago this week, on January 3rd, 2000, the first Raw of the new year featured a WWE Championship match pitting Triple H against the reigning champion, The Big Show. And to give a little background of what was going on at the time, Big Show, I don't believe, was supposed to be the champ. In fact, I know he wasn't supposed to be the champion because he wasn't in the triple threat match at Survivor Series. Big Show was a last-minute fill-in for Steve Austin, who went down with neck surgery. They decided to give the Big Show the belt, probably more because they felt they owed it to the fans for screwing them out of the match they promised that night. So Big Show went over at Survivor Series, won the title for the first time, had what I thought was a very entertaining feud with the Big Boss Man, largely because of the Boss Man. The match itself that the two of them had, oh my God, it was one of the worst title matches I've ever seen. So the plan was to get the belt back on Triple H. I'm sure Triple H never was going to lose the belt in the first place. And that had a lot to do with them wanting to get the belt back on him, because whatever plans they had for him in 2000, he needed the belt back. My guess would be in that triple threat match, he was going to go over on Austin and Rock, which, it's funny, if that would have happened, you can make the argument that it kind of invalidates Chris Jericho's big claim to fame that, oh, I beat Steve Austin and The Rock in the same night. I know it was separate matches, but Triple H probably would have been the first guy to do that. He probably would have been the first guy to lay claim to the fact that, hey, I beat Stone Cold and The Rock in the same match on the same night. But it never happened. So now we got to get the belt back on Triple H. So they have a Big Show Triple H match on Raw. I went back and watched it so that I can be reminded of exactly what happened. The match itself was nothing special. And the finish was a low blow. Because the members of DX, Triple H was with DX again at this time. They were heels. And DX ran down. They kind of distracted Big Show, distracted the referee. That gave Triple H an opening to kick him in the crotch. Gave him a pedigree. 1, 2, 3. Big celebration. Green and black DX-colored balloons are falling from the ceiling. And this kicked off the best year of Triple H's career. When I look back on the career of Triple H, and he's had some great matches, most of which, in my opinion, came from this time period. I could probably count on one hand the number of truly great matches Triple H has had in the last 7 or 8 years. When I think of the really great Triple H matches, it's those matches with Foley in 2000. It's the matches with Rock in 2000. It's the match at, you could say, Survivor Series in 2000. Him and Austin had a great brawl. Him and Austin had that great Three Stages of Hell match a few months after that. Him and Undertaker at WrestleMania 17, it was just an undercard match. There was nothing on the line. I thought that was a great match. The tag match, Triple H and Austin against Jericho and Ben. I mean, there were a lot of great matches that Triple H was involved in that 2000 to 2001 period before the quad tear. And that year 2000 stands out to me as the best in-ring year, at least, of Triple H's entire career. Also, on this episode of Raw, Stephanie McMahon declared Chris Jericho and Chyna to be co-intercontinental champions after their double pinfall finish on SmackDown the previous Thursday. That wonderful period of Jericho and Chyna as co-champions, which somebody once pointed out to me, and I don't know if this has changed, maybe you could check it out and let me know, but in the title history on WWE.com, I don't even think they list them as being co-champions at that time. I think somebody said they list them as vacant. So maybe they just want us to pretend like it never happened. I'd like to pretend that this never happened. 4 years ago, on January 4th, 2010, the Monday Night Skirmish takes place. That's what I called it at the time. Can't really call it a war. It's pretty one-sided. It was Raw against a live 3-hour edition of Impact, which featured the return of Jeff Hardy to TNA and the debuts of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff, starting out that wonderful era in TNA history. On Raw, meanwhile, they countered with the return of Bret the Hitman Hart, making his first Raw appearance in 12 years. He confronted Shawn Michaels. They buried the hatchet, and at the end of the show, Vince McMahon left Bret Hart laying with a low blow, which would lead to a horrendous match between the two of them at WrestleMania 26. A match that, quite frankly, came about 13 or 14 years too late. And that's This Week in Wrestling History. You can follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster, for live updates this Wednesday. WWE is going to be making a major announcement in Las Vegas, it is believed to be, regarding the launch of their new network. It has been years in the making, and it looks like it's finally here. It'll be one of the two biggest stories in 2014, the network and their TV rights negotiations. So I'll be following along, as many of you will be, and I'll have live thoughts if you want to follow me on Twitter. Facebook, we're all over Facebook. We have a profile page, a fan page that you can like, and a private discussion group that you can join. I will approve your membership. And don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube. That's where you'll find my full review from Raw this past Monday night, over half an hour, thoughts on Bryan joining the Wyatts, Brock being back, and some potential opponents for him, Wade Barrett, and previewing old school Raw. So head over to YouTube and check that out, and check out other Sound Off extras that I've posted in recent weeks as well. And one last reminder here for those of you kind enough to vote for us in the Stitcher Awards, it would be much appreciated. We are up for Best Sports Commentary in the 2013 Stitcher Awards. All you got to do is go to stitcher.promotw.com. Scroll down, you'll see the category, you'll see the Sound Off logo. Click it once, you'll see a check mark. Scroll down, submit your vote, and you can vote once a day, every day, between now and January 13th. So voting is open for a little more than another week. Every vote counts. Spread the word. And to those who nominated us and got us this far, I thank you. So that's going to do it for this week. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of The Sound Off, episode 309. Until then, be well, stay safe, and we'll see you back here next week. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to The Sala Monster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Because I'm the man!
You don't shut your mouth, I am going to punch you in the face.
The bad.
You're going to prove to the world that all you are is a B-plus player.
And the ugly.
And then Hogan announces that he's going to defend the championship, Bully Ray is, against the same Sting who just 3 months ago lost a match where if he lost, he can never again get another title shot. What in the fuck just happened?
Well, mostly the good.
I can't get a break with Ace's name. I got to get rid of this mess. I got to get this club. This club sucks.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes, The Sala Monster Sounds Off.